Welcome to Under the Fig Tree podcast with host Reverend Dr. Ben Haupt and Reverend Micah Glenn. In today's episode, Ben and Micah sit down with a special guest as they meditate under the fig tree.
What's up? Welcome back once again to another episode of Under the Fig Tree. I am your host, Reverend Micah Glenn, the Director of Recruitment here at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. And as always, joined by my highly esteemed co-host, Reverend Dr. Ben Haupt. How are you, bro?
Good. It's getting cold out there.
Yes, it is. I don't like it. But you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Yep.
I was, it's post-Thanksgiving, getting ready for Christmas or an Advent season. For the first time, I'm putting Christmas lights up.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was doing it, I thought it was colder, so I put on some snow pants. And my house, especially the front, is not shaded.
No, that's right.
And yeah. I was getting destroyed by the sun. And for the first time, maybe in my life, when it was cold outside, I was like, man, I'm hot. Doesn't happen often.
I've never heard you say anything like that before.
No.
You're always bundled up.
Yeah, I did. Same, had on my hat.
Yeah.
I had gloves outside, but I'm just not built for cold weather, man. It just doesn't agree with my mind, my body, or my spirit.
I always used to make fun of people that were older because they would say, well, I just can't handle the cold anymore. And I'm starting to feel it. I'm starting to understand. I'm starting to say, oh, man, I'm not sure that I can do the cold anymore. But it's all things aside, it's not that bad here in St. Louis. It's pretty balmy. We have four seasons.
Yeah.
But it's nothing crazy.
Well, it's still very much the fall here. It doesn't get like winter in St. Louis till January, February. And then you just won't see me outside. Anyway.
Well, we have a special guest with us today, we should our listeners are keen to hear from him, probably not so much from us. Maybe that's not true. Our listeners love us, and we love our listeners. But today, we are joined with my colleague on the faculty, Eli Prieto. He is the Associate Dean of Urban and Cross-Cultural Ministry here at the seminary. He's also Associate Professor of Practical Theology. And so we are pleased to have Dr. Prieto with us. Dr. Prieto has a background of, a lot of different things. He served as a parish pastor in Brazil, and then he was a seminary professor in Brazil at Seminario Concordia. I probably didn't say that right, but something along those lines. He also served in a capacity as an urban mission developer at Lutheran Inner City Network Coalition in San Antonio for 10 years prior to coming here, so has lots of experience. Prior to coming to the seminary, he would call me up and say, hey, I have another student to send you to the seminary, and so Dr. Prieto and I got to know each other really because he was sending students to the seminary. And so I said, you know, we should talk to him about maybe becoming a professor. And one thing led to another. And now we're grateful, brother, to call you colleagues. So welcome to Under the Fig Tree podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, guys. I'm honored to be here with you, both of you. So... yeah, I never thought I would be here one day. maybe I could be, I thought about being interviewed by you guys, but not being a professor here. That's another story. So I'm learning how to handle this new position, I guess.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have you here, especially for our students in the Ethnic and Immigrant Institute of Theology and our Center for Hispanic Studies, as well as our on-campus students who come from a diverse backgrounds of ethnicities and races. It's really good to have you on campus and to have your support and your encouragement as we continue to expand the people groups to which the Missouri Synod reaches and raises up new church workers.
Yeah, it's a big challenge we have as LCMS, I guess, right? We're one of the widest church in the U.S.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think it's our fault. I mean, you know, you're a German church, so what you would expect, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But things change and continue to change. And I think we, as a church, but also Concordia Seminary is aware of that and is working with the Center for Hispanic Studies and the EIT that we can bring more students that have different, you know, ethnicity to be here, not only in the MGIF, but especially Center for Hispanic Studies and the EIT.
Well, yeah, I mean, the ethnic demographics of the LCMS, again, I always think of it like this. It's not so much a problem because, you know, at the end of the day, and this is a struggle, and it's cliche to say, and it's not an excuse, but like birds of a feather flock together, is that people tend to do things with people that look like them, even before they do things with people who think like them. And so, again, not so much a problem. It's a challenge and a healthy challenge for us to continually, you know, examine who we are and think about how we connect to and reach different people groups. And same thing as a not a, a completely white, half white member of the LCMS and ordained clergy, you know, representation is beneficial. And so as the, you know, as the community is around us become more diverse, if we, as we get more people who are qualified to fulfill different positions, having that representation on campus goes a really long way, especially when it comes to building trust with different groups.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is something that's been built into the very fabric of Christianity right from the very beginning. The Apostle Paul says, James and Peter, you continue to reach Jewish people who need to know Messiah Jesus, but I'm going to reach people who are not Jews.
Right.
And so he begins this multi-ethnic outreach, right? And I would say even I'm working on some research into the early history of the LCMS, and the founders of the LCMS, though they were German, immediately when they got here to the United States, they start reaching out to ethnic people groups other than their own.
Yeah.
There's a Chinese mission here in St. Louis. They immediately start reaching out to Africans who are on slave plantations. They're reaching Chippewa Indians. They're learning Chippewa, and so this is sort of deeply part of who we are because we understand the gospel and how important it is for all people to know Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely. I think LCMS has a rich history of mission work. You know, I'm example of that because I'm Brazilian. So the Lutheran Church, LCMS went to Brazil in 1900. So the first missionary got there in 1900, and he met some German immigrants that spoke German, so he was able to communicate with them because also he spoke German. But the church has been not only in Brazil, but Argentina, you know, Uruguay, Chile. I mean, you look to the whole Central America, South America, we have Lutherans. And not only there, so you look ministry that we have done in Japan, India, Africa. So I understand, you know, when sometimes people try to criticize LCMS, you're not missional. I said, well, I cannot agree with you 100% because we are, you know. An example of that is me. You know, I said, well, what about me? So
right. So
I can say, yeah, we are a missional church. We can do a better job with that. Yes, of course we can.
Yeah.
And this is why we are here, right? We are talking about that in this podcast. You are in a school that prepares theologians to serve not only people that speak your own language. In our case, it would be English, but we do Spanish. We do many languages from Africa and India. Deaf, you know, we use sign language. So, yeah, we are a missional church. And and we are trying to do a better job, like I said, you know, and we are always asking the Holy Spirit to guide us in that process, right? Because yeah. that his work. He is the one that gathers and calls and gathers the church,
yeah.
right? So we are just servants of the word or of the gospel. I think we need to keep that in mind too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your work prior to coming to seminary. You were a seminary professor. Mm-hmm. You were a pastor. You were a mission developer. How did, maybe we should start here, because this is usually where we start, is how did you get into ministry in the first place?
Well, that's a good question, Ben. I never thought I would become a pastor. You know, I have two older brothers, and there's a big gap between me and them, 17 and 15 years older than me. My dad was a nominal Roman Catholic. My mom was Presbyterian, and she raised us in the Christian faith, which most of that was being Presbyterian. I was baptized by a Presbyterian pastor. But it wasn't until we moved from São Paulo to Rio de Janeiro, if you know the geography of Brazil, so those two states are not really far away. And we moved there because my mom had a sister, so I had this aunt living there. My mom wanted to live in the same state. We moved there after my dad retired. So, and then we moved close by this Lutheran church, Good Shepherd. And this church, you know, was really in a walking distance from our home, but we never went to that church until one day we did it. So we are coming back from downtown, worshiping at the Presbyterian church, and the bus passed by this church. And my mom already had noticed that. And that Sunday she said, hey, look, this is a Lutheran church. And then she started to talk about Martin Luther with me, which I didn't have any clue who Martin Luther was, you know. And she says, well, he was a reformer, you know, and maybe one day we should come here, which we did. The following Sunday, we walked there, and then this was this small church. The pastor was a German pastor, Pastor Luis Carlos Garlip. I hope he is listening to us. He's still active in church, even though he retired as a full-time pastor. He's also a professor. But anyways, Luis was in his first call, and, you know, he's trying to grow this church that's predominantly German, right? So we walk in. I was probably 12 years old, and my mom, you know, it's something interesting. So if my mom lived in the U.S., my mom would be considered a black woman because my mom was a mulatta, so it's a mix of white and African-Brazilian. So, but my mom was black, you know, if she were born here. And my dad was a white guy, you know, Spaniard, you know, green eyes. So they met, they married. So that is my background. So I grew up, you know, in this mixed marriage. Probably most of my cousins were African Brazilians, you know. I had most of my cousins were, you know, African Brazilians that We never talk about this difference. But anyway, so that was us, you know, growing up. And then we went to this church. The pastor invited us, and we continued to go, and we got involved there a little bit. We moved away because we moved to another town. Then we came back after my dad had passed, and that I was about 15 on that time then when I came back. And then I walked to the church by myself with my nephew just to worship. I got there late in the worship, and the pastor was preaching, but I could tell he recognized me from the pulpit. You know, the church was really big, so. And then after church, he said, hey, man, you disappeared. You know, where you have been? I said, well, we move out to another town. Now we move back here. So he took me back home. Then he said, I'll take you home because I want to see where you're living now. So it was this guy that was mission-minded guy. He says, you know, this guy's back. I want to see where he's living. So he took me there with his old white VW bug. I remember that. So, and, you know, when we got to my house, he says, let me knock on the door. I want to surprise your mom. So he knocked on the door. My mom opened the door. There was this big, tall German guy. You know, he's, what, 6'3", 6'4". And my mom was so happy. And he said, I found your son in the street. So I brought him back home. That's, you know, all these things start again. And then by that time, I was thinking about considering to become an officer in the Navy. You know, I was born in an island in Brazil. I thought, you know, it'd be cool to be in the Navy. My two brothers were airborne, you know, in the Army. So I'm not jumping from planes. But, you know, I think it's good to be underwater. So I thought I'd be probably, you know, officer in the Navy, whatever. But in the past, when he started to talk to me, and we had some preaching stations that he would take me to teach Sunday school. And I was, what, 15 years old guy, 14, 15, you know. And then he started to talk to me about becoming a pastor. And to that point, I never thought I would become a pastor. I really never thought about it, you know. Not because I was a wild kid, you know. I think I was very well behaved, you know. My middle brother was the craziest one. He got in trouble a lot, in real trouble. But I wasn't like that. But, you know, I never thought to become a pastor. Even though I had, from my mom's side, my mom had a big family, brothers and sisters, and two of her brothers that were twins, they're very involved in the Presbyterian Church. They're what we call presbyters. You know, they would preach, they would teach Bible studies. So they're really what we call close to a pastor, but that was the one that we have in my family. But then finally the pastor said, hey, you need to go to the pre-sem, which was, you know, 3 years of kind of a high school level. And I had to move from Rio de Janeiro to some Rio Grande do Sul. And the pastor's wife took me, you know, there. And we stayed with her family. And then I started to do my pre-sem. I was 17 years old, you know. So then we started to learn all the Lutheran tradition, right? You learn German, you learn Latin, you learn music, Greek. That was the pre-sem plus all the doctrine, all the, you know, the stuff mm-hmm. that you learn. And then in the seminar, then you start to learn Hebrew. But, you know, it was 3 years, and I was overwhelmed, you know, with that. So a lot of education, you know, all my professors, you know, Lutheran pastors teaching us full time. So my first year was really a big struggle because I didn't have that Lutheran background, right? So the only thing I knew was the small catechism. I memorized the whole small catechism, you know. So that was the only thing I knew. But most of my classmates, they came from German background, right? So they went to parochial schools. So they grew up in the Lutheran church. They were always ahead of me in terms of the knowledge about the church. But, you know, I was catching up and able to be with them. And finally, I graduated and I went to the seminary in Porto Alegre. And I did another 5 years of seminary in Porto Alegre, graduating in 1983. And then by that time, the church was preparing me to become a missionary for the deaf. So until that point, we didn't have any missionaries or any pastor for deaf in Brazil. So the church said, we're going to train you to do that. So I learned the sign language in Brazil, and then I did my vicarage among the deaf. I didn't have any pastors to mentor me because we didn't have any other pastor work with the deaf. So they just mentored me as a bishop how to preach and teach Bible study, make hospital calls. But in terms of deaf culture, I learned by myself being with the deaf. I would go to the deaf club every Saturday, you know, hang out with them and learn the language. But then when I graduated in 1984, I came to Concordia Seminary already as a pastor to be trained here. So in that time, Concordia Seminary had a professor, Dr. Daniel Pokorny, that is in heaven now. He was teaching. We had about 6-7 deaf students in MDiv here. You know, it was really fascinating to see that, you know, they're studying to become a pastor, studying with regular students, you know, and they're all deaf. So the seminary had interpreters for them. Some of the students that were hoping to become missionaries for the deaf learned sign language and translate for their colleagues, you know. And so I was here for 6 months. Then I went back to Brazil and I started my ministry with the deaf. So that was my first call, and I worked for a long time with the deaf, being a chaplain for a deaf school with 300 deaf kids. You know, until 1991, then I came to Fort Wayne to do some graduate studies. And then after 2 years, I went back to Brazil, hoping I would work with the deaf again. And then the synod, the Brazilian synod said, no, we want you to be a pastor in a regular church. So then they, you know, a large congregation in South Brazil, 1,800 members, predominantly German. We had only two members of the church that are not Germans. It was me, another member of the church. Everybody were German descendants in the church, the whole church.
But Portuguese speaking.
Yeah, they spoke Portuguese in the service, but we did a lot of things in German, which is not they don't speak in that area the Hochdeutsch, the High German. They speak the Plattdeutsch, the Low German. Yeah. They speak that dialect is the Hunsricker. And we didn't use that in the service, but when we had some funerals, they want us to pray the Father Hunsen, right, the Lord's Prayer, or some prayers in German. So, but some of my members, especially the elderly folks, they spoke, and they still do this day, speak that language, so that dialect. So if you go make calls, you know, they would speak in German with you. So I had always an elder with me, Mr. Rahmeier, so he was my translator. So if I didn't understand, I would ask him what they said. But, you know, as long as they could talk to me in German, they are happy. And then I would talk to them back in Portuguese or say words in German that I knew. And that was my ministry there. You know, it was a small town, a large parish. We had 7 places to serve. During that time, I had 2 vicars working with me from the seminary. And one of them came back as my associate pastor. And then when I got the call to become a professor in the seminary, he became the senior pastor. He still is in this church, St. Paul. Wow. He has been there over 25 years in the same church. He did his vicarage there, and he came back to be the senior pastor. He's a senior pastor there now, Jair Erstling. And he speaks really well that dialect. I mean, he speaks both High German and Low German. And has been a successful pastor in his ministry in this church. So, and then after that, I went to the SEM to teach, which was an honor for me to be a professor in the seminary. I taught for 5 years in the practical department. But in Brazil, you know, you don't have a big faculty, so you pretty much teach everything in that department, pretty much. The only thing I didn't teach was counseling, you know, but pretty much in the practical department, everything I had to teach. And then also taught at Luther University, UBRA. And then in 2001, I came to San Antonio to serve at Concordia Lutheran Church as assistant pastor. And later on, I became the director of world missions for them. And then I started to do my GME in here in St. Louis. And then the plan was to go back, but Concordia invited me to stay longer. I stay longer and longer and longer. So I worked for Concordia 10 and a half years. And then before I came to Concordia here, Concordia Seminary, I was working as executive director for Link San Antonio, a ministry that I started and I worked for 10 years doing, you know, mission work, cross-cultural ministry, planting church. So it's in a nutshell, that's pretty much my experience as a pastor, you know, and now being a professor again. So it's kind of an interesting circle, you know, that comes in your life. So, and I'm amazed by that. I really, you know, when I think about my pastor saying, I'm going to send you to the seminary, that was the original question you had, you know. I never, in a dream, that I could say one day I'll be a pastor in the U.S. or even be a professor in the seminary, in Brazil or even here, you know. So, especially for a guy that doesn't have a German last name like me, you know, it's kind of a, wow, you know. Some days I have to pinch myself about that. You know, it's unbelievable what God has given me and my family with that too, you know. I'm very honored to be part of this church. And when I say Lutheran church, I mean, you know, in the whole world, because Brazil here in all over, you know, that we don't realize that. Again, it's something before I let you guys ask another question. But, you know, we think about LCMS and we think about the Lutheran church in U.S., but there is a much larger Lutheran church that people don't realize that, you know, and it's not like us, you know. You go to Africa, you go to Brazil, or any part of the world, we have true Lutherans that don't look like Germans at all, you know, and they're true Lutherans. That's amazing, you know, and that's I think, reaffirms, you know, that the Lutheran church is a missional church, you know. That's what I think about it.
Well, even in European cultures, you know, I'm bringing this up for a reason, and our hearers have heard me talk about it, and I just will continue to talk about it because I think it's such a valuable experience. When I studied at Westfield House in Cambridge, England, you know, their church is diverse. It's not very big, but, like, you know, some of them are homegrown and they're English by descent, which isn't necessarily the same as Germans just because they come from Europe. But, you know, I always say this, and I mean it so much, that strangely, Westfield House in Cambridge is just a major crossroad of global Lutheranism. Mm-hmm. And you get to meet so many remarkable people that are Lutheran from different places mm-hmm. in the world. And again, you have Lutheran conversations, the good old confessional conversations. We sound the same. Yeah. But then you talk about immediacy for ministry and what's most important, and the conversation changes based upon where we're coming from
and what
we think about the needs for the church in the places that we come from. And all that to say that, you know, I didn't know Eli until he came here as a faculty member, but we have at least, I don't know Claudio well. Dorothy knows him better because Dorothy's from England, but there's a Brazilian pastor.
Yeah, he's my classmate, Claudio Flor.
Yeah, in Kentish Town, in a neighborhood of London, England, Claudio Flor, who I met. I preached at his church, actually, when I was studying there. It's just one of those wonderful things that, like, he's a classmate of yours. Dorothy knew him because he's a pastor in England for a long time. I show up and I meet him and his family. I preach at his congregation, and then here we are. And we have these close mutual ties globally.
That's right.
In the church. It's such a remarkable and a thing that should be absolutely cherished.
Yeah, and Claudio's a faithful pastor. You know, he went to England the same time I went to San Antonio. You know, he left 6 months before. And also his goal was to do his graduate studies because Claudio was a professor in our seminary in São Paulo. He taught Greek, so he was always a good Greek scholar, you know, when we were students. Anyways, but he did his STM here at Concordia Seminary, by the way. But then he went there, he got this call, and I think he never finished his doctorate, and he's a wonderful pastor in London, you know. Raised his kids. They're all British, I guess, now.
Yep.
But, you know, sometimes we talk. In fact, yesterday, Claudio sent me a message. You know, we always talk in WhatsApp because we are classmates. We studied together in the pre-sem and in the sem. You know, we studied together 8 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's fascinating to see that, you know, Glenn, Micah, mm-hmm. I'm calling you by your last name. But anyways, you know, it's fascinating that you have been there and you met him. You know, this is really to say the Lutheran Church is still a small family in that sense, even though it's, you know, it's global, right? I mean, because we speak the same language in some ways, right?
Yeah.
And theologically. And
the same outlook, of God's word. And again, even though, again, focus is slightly different, but mm-hmm. the same purpose in the world.
Yeah, the passion for Jesus and the gospel. I think that's really what it is. I think it's very important for us to think about that. You know, what matters most for us is Jesus and the gospel, right? That's really what we are here, right?
That's right.
That way I have this school, this seminary. That's why we become pastors, right?
Yep.
To preach this Jesus that suffered and died and rose again for you, like. It's very important to emphasize that, and I think Lutherans are good with that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's our I think our the strength of our church is our theology and how seriously we take God's word, especially centered mm-hmm. in Christ. So I want to ask a little bit about a couple of programs because we've had some deaconesses on to talk about diaconal work. We've had director of the MDiv program on, but you really represent a couple of unique and particular programs here at the seminary. So could you tell us a little bit about EIIT and CHS and how those two programs kind of work? Just give us some basics. Some of our listeners may not have ever even heard of those programs.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question because sometimes people don't know that we have those programs here. Even though, to be honest with you, I'm getting to know the students on campus, right? And you'll be surprised. Even some of our students here don't know we have those programs in the seminary.
Sure.
It's amazing. I said, really? Don't know we have a CHS and EIT? No, what's that? You know,
we'll have them listen to this podcast episode after this.
Yeah, but they can... you know, I know because there are so many things going on this campus. You know, people don't know. I mean, and you're busy here, right? You're a student. You're studying and preparing for class, doing your field work. I mean, that's your world here, right? So, but it's much larger than being an MDiv student. So I'm going to start with the CHS because the CHS, Center for Hispanic Studies, the name already explains what it is. So the whole center is based in this Spanish language, right, or Hispanic culture. is a four-year program that leads to ordination in the LCMS. You don't get MDiv or MA, even though you can have MA after you finish your program with CHS. I think we are one of the few seminaries in the U.S. that offers MA totally in Spanish in theology. But it's another story. The CHS is all the classes are taught in Spanish, and it, for everybody that speaks Spanish, right? And most of people that are immigrants that came to this country that still continue speaking Spanish. And of course, the Hispanic population in the U.S. is huge and it's getting bigger and bigger. There's a need for Spanish speakers in our Senate. I'm not the director of this program. We have Dr. Leo Sanchez that has been here for many years. He's the director of CHS, and the co-director is a professor. He's not a professor, he's a teacher, but Marcus Kempf. And Marcus, or Mark Kempf, he goes by Marcus because he kind of make his name sounds more like Hispanic. And he, in fact, Marcus was born in Central America. His dad was a missionary there. And he and Leo, they pretty much lead the Center for Hispanic Studies. And like I said, it's a four-year program for everybody that speaks Spanish. So you can take the whole program in Spanish. I teach in that program too, which is very fascinating because Spanish is not my first language. So it's a big challenge for me too. But, you know, I enjoy talking to them. And you find students all over U.S., you know, doing different types of work, but they also do a ministry. So it's a very intense for them. Mm. So, and then we go to the EIT with the Ethnical Institute, Immigrant Institute of Theology. It also a four-year track, doesn't offer AMGF, but also you get the certification to be ordained in the LCMS, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, to be a pastor and a missionary. And who are the students there? So are all the immigrants that came to U.S., but they don't speak Spanish, right? And so what is the common language? Then becomes English because they are living in the country that speak English, right? But most of our students, they speak more than 5-6 languages, you know? People that come from Africa and some people that come from India. We have people from all over that they don't speak English as a first language, maybe it's their fifth or sixth language. Yep. But they come here, and again, this program is online as well. The Center for Hispanic Studies, I forgot to mention that. Both programs, they're online. The students will be here for the first week of orientation week, and they get to know the campus, they meet some of the professors, but then they go home. And at the same time that they start that program, they're vicars for 4 years, right? So they're vicars working with a mentor. And then after 4 years, they graduate and they're ordained in the ministry of the LCMS. So those are two unique programs that we have. So, and if you are listening to us now, so if you know any person in your congregation that speaks Spanish, or even they're from Africa, India, other parts of the world, you know, and you think those people are a good, faithful Christians and willing to reach out to people that speak their mother tongue, send them in our way. You know, we like to prepare them to become pastors because we need more and more.
That's excellent. Well, one of the questions that we always ask our guests is what advice you would have for prospective students. And I'm thinking particularly because of your role here at the seminary and these programs that you represent, I'm wondering if you could speak especially to prospective students that don't come from what is the typical or the traditional background. So somebody from a non-Germanic background, what would you say to, and then I'm going to flip it because I think it's also important for you to talk about for Germanic students who are coming in, who also may need to be thinking a little bit about this cross-cultural experience that they might get here at the seminary. But what would you say first to the student who maybe feels like, I'm not German, I'm not sure that seminary is for me?
Well, I would say it is for you because I'm here talking to you and I'm not German, you know. Micah also is not German descendant. You know, he has, your mom is probably German?
She's like half German.
Half German, right?
Yeah. Right? Like my grandma, I think she was maybe a second or third generation immigrant. But so, yeah. But I'm not German, though.
Yeah, Mike, you're not, right? So we have, at least in this program here, besides you, Josh, we have two guys that don't have that German background, right? Yeah. And if you are here, that tells you, you can be here, too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm amazed. I'm walking on campus. We have a lot of graduate students from other parts of the world studying here. But I was so gladly surprised, you know, when I walk another day on campus and I met this student. He's from Haiti, right?
Yeah.
And he's a first-year MDiv student. I think his last name is Paul. Mm-hmm. I forgot his first name. But, you know, I met him and started to talk and was fascinating what he told me. I said, why you're here, right? I mean, why, in the sense, why you're doing the MDiv, not why you're here because you are here. But he says, well, I thought to go to the EIT, he said. I said, well, you'll be working with me, I said. But then he told me this. He said, my pastor, you know, which I believe is an Anglo pastor,
right,
you know, and he said, look, I enjoy my 4 years in the seminary when I was there. And he told Paul, I want you to have the same experience that I had. And he found the ways and, you know, scholarships, whatever he could have funds to send Paul to be here. So Paul will be here for 4 years, you know, of course, 2 years vicarage and coming back. But I can tell you, you know, if you come, you help to change that perspective, you know. I always say that everything that I have in my life as a Lutheran pastor, I owe to God, of course, but then to the Lutheran Church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My wife, to begin with, you know, she was born and raised in the Lutheran Church. So my wife was a gift from the church, I mean, from God through the church to me. But everything that I have, you know, and I think, yes, you know, LCMS is willing to talk to you. You know, looking from a distance, you think, I don't belong here or I don't belong in the ministry of the LCMS because I'm not German, I'm not white guy. I said, no. It's not true. You do belong because the church is global. Don't think about Lutheran Church only from the LCMS perspective. You know, we just talk about that today in this program, right? Yeah. I mean, you have a place here, and all the professors will do the best for you to be successful here. You know, they're going to walk with you and help you to do well, whatever you need to be a good student and a wonderful pastor in the Lutheran Church. So if I can give you a word of encouragement, especially because you are maybe a Hispanic immigrant or, you know, another immigrant from other parts of the world, and you are in touch with the Lutheran Church, talk to your pastor and say, hey, can I become a pastor? Can I go and visit Concordia Seminary? And I know you guys that are involved in this, you know, recruiting students, you'll be welcoming and talking to them.
Oh, yeah.
My dream is to see more and more students that don't have that background to be being here as a students.
You know, yeah.
I talk about that a lot because the EIT program and CHS, they're treasures. And incredible work.
Mm-hmm.
The distance, breaking down language barriers and all the other stuff. But as I go to other ethnic groups and things like that, and we talk about recruiting, we talk about their students, I always highlight that even within the Black Clergy Caucus, you know, because of all the things you said, you know, it's one of those things where it's nice to have representation on faculty and staff, especially that are ordained. But it's such a more remarkable thing to have that representation in the student body of, mm-hmm. of helping people see, you know, like you said, that this is a place for them. And, you know, in October, there will be an Oktoberfest, and every once in a while, there's a goofy student that puts on a $30 pair of lederhosen. But nonetheless,
$250 pair of lederhosen, well, probably
some. But I'm saying
not,
like the
not
one,
from students.
No, exactly. Anyway, which again is fine. It's, you know, if you don't like sauerkraut, don't eat the sauerkraut. But if you pretzels and cheese should be delicious, and you know, a bratwurst. Yeah. But again, it's one of those things where it's easy to sit back and criticize from a distance.
Absolutely.
But it's so much more impactful if you come and help affect change from the ground up. It always starts, real change always starts in the next generation. I'm not talking about age, like your physical age, but in your age of ministry. So if you can learn in English and you can do it comprehensively, I tell people all the time, like, and it's not to denigrate EIT or CHS at all. But if you can learn in English comprehensively,
come here.
This is actually the place for you to become a pastor or a deaconess.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think students do have a good experience here. I have a special heart for students that don't come from, as much as I mean, my last name is very German, right? Oh. And I do all the German stuff, but I think maybe because of my time actually over in Germany and some other experiences as a kid and such, I just have a deep heart for people that might be seen or might see themselves as kind of on the periphery. So I'm always talking to this Haitian student that you were talking with. And I'm always asking him, you know, Yuder, how are you doing, man? You hanging in there? He's having a phenomenal time.
He's enjoying it.
He's loving his studies. Yeah. He's doing really well in his classes.
Yeah.
So he's a very, very bright guy. And we have lots of stories like that. So, you know, that's phenomenal. What would you say to the German background student or the person that maybe grew up in the LCMS that maybe needs to open their eyes a little bit and see, you know, have an experience or get connected up with some of these?
Well, you know, I think I would like to encourage them too. And just going back to Revelation chapter 7, right, when he talks about the vision of heaven, people from all tribes and nations. And I this is something I'm repeating myself, saying that, and I find myself repeating that all the time when I say, if you don't like diversity, you're not like to be in heaven. Mm-hmm. So, because heaven, it'll be from people from north, south, east, and west, right? So if you grew up in the Lutheran church, I know you understand the value that we have in this church, not only our doctrine or teaching or tradition, liturgical and everything. But also remember this, we have all this treasure for a reason. Yeah. This is why I like the word confessional. You know, what does it mean to be confessional? Is just to keep this teaching and keep for ourselves. Is confessional means that we proclaim this confessionality that we have. And that's what I think, you know, if you grew up in the Lutheran church and you value your tradition and your faith, consider coming to the seminary and also reaching out to people that didn't have a chance that you had to grow up in this church, you know, and say, look, I know what my church has to offer, and I would like to share that with you. You know, I think it's good for us being Lutherans is to think, how can I talk to someone that doesn't speak Lutheranish, right? Yeah. How can I talk to someone that don't speak my language? That's really what fascinates me, guys. It really is to talk to people that don't speak the way I do.
Yeah.
And it's a challenge, you know. I struggle with English, I struggle with Spanish, but since I'm in the water, I'm going to swim, you know. I'm going to try to be there. And you'll be surprised how many people that don't have the same Lutheran background, you appreciate your love and passion for your church when you share that with them, saying, do you know what? You have a place in my church too. And so if you consider to come, you're planning or thinking about coming to the seminary, and you say, well, I grew up in this middle town in Midwest, you know, U.S., and I don't know much about how to reach out to people. I said, come here, you know, the seminary are going to train you to do that. And, of course, the Holy Spirit will guide you, whatever you're going to call you to be a pastor. But don't forget that the Lutheran Church has a call, and we need to be on that. This is the time for us to be in the church. I think President Dale Meyer always talk about that.
Yeah.
And our President Egger also emphasized that. So that's the time to be here. And if you like to make the difference in this church, consider coming to the seminary. And consider about reaching out to people that don't have your background.
Yeah.
And they'll love to listen about what you have in Jesus. That's my advice.
Amen. Well, Eli, thank you for taking the time to sit down with us to introduce you to our audience, just at large, because it's you're a treasure. It's a blessing to have you here, a fellow McCall Terrace native at the moment, who likes barbecue.
We live in the same street, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're neighbors.
We're neighbors.
You know, we'll put some salt on some beef and we'll put it on the fire, and it'll be good. Again, thank you for joining us. I just look forward to getting to know you more and to see the impact that you have on our community and our students, and then therefore the church at large. And for all you out there, thank you for joining us and taking the time to listen about an incredible topic, something that we value here at CSL. Thank you for joining us under the fig tree. Once again, have a blessed day.